ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast here on ESPN. Kevin Negandhi with you. It is September 9th, a Thursday, a couple days away from the weekend. And as we have with the new format, Joey Galloway joins us on Thursdays with his pick. And then afterwards, we have a College Football Insider with their thoughts on the weekend, as well as what we can look forward to down the road. And that is Adam Rittenberg, who's going to join us. He also has a piece on ESPN.com, basically taking a closer look at all the new quarterbacks with some of the major programs making their debut and the first impressions, and also a little bit of the realignment conversation surrounding the Big 12 with the recent news earlier this week. Want to remind everybody, too, with the new format, each and every day that is starting on Sunday through Thursday, and then we have the podcast release. We have different voices coming up on Sunday. Our next podcast will feature Paul Feinbaum talking to Matt Berry and their initial reactions from what they saw over the weekend. For now, we will get you set up for the games and Joey Galloway with his picks. It's Thursday and it's time to make our picks here with Joey Galloway. We will obviously take a look at five or six matchups every Thursday, the ones that really stand out and the ones I think that are intriguing when it comes to the line. And we're not going to pick a bunch of blowouts because that's just not fun. And when you look at the schedule in week two, there are a ton of blowouts, Joey, a ton of, you know, lines that are off the board. When we're talking about Alabama Mercer, we can keep on going. It feels like cupcake week for many of the powerhouses. But let's start here with Ohio State hosting Oregon.
Hold on, Kev. Are we not going to pay off the picks from last week?
We don't need to do that.
I mean, you went LSU. I went UCLA. Like, I'm just wondering, are we just going to just keep picking and never keep a record, never say.
I mean, Taylor, did you keep a record? I don't think Taylor kept a record. We could just move on. Taylor,
what in the record? World?
There might be a couple notes. Who knows?
You made a couple notes.
Yeah.
Come on, Taylor. All right, what do we got, Taylor?
Let me tally them up. Why don't you guys get started here, and I'll tally them up, and we'll get to the picks.
What kind of program is this? This isn't Temple University. We're doing something for real here, Kev. Let's go.
I don't need to hear you. I don't need to hear you after week one. I don't need to hear.
Let's go, Ben Simmons.
Yeah, you feel really good. And listen, there are going to be weeks where you don't want to hear the tally. And I know you're feeling really good about UCLA and what you did there. And by the way, I gave Boog the business yesterday. He already put the team on DEFCON 1 LSU. So he knows it, that they're in trouble if they don't turn things around.
Yeah, they've been in trouble, and he was already on the ledge. So it just needed just a little push to get him over the edge. So we knew that was coming.
Joe, you and I, we're part of a text chain with him. And, you know, in the beginning of the season, through the years, there's a lot of barking. And Boog has been super quiet about LSU. And that just said enough heading into the weekend against UCLA.
Yeah, it's an amazing text chain between you, Jonathan Vilma, and Booger McFarland, Rob Limley. So when you line up Miami, UConn, Temple, LSU, and here I am, the Ohio State University.
Carrying the flag.
It's like we should just move straight to basketball season, because it is a waste of time talking college football with that group of schools in the past couple of years. But hey, I'm a team player. I'll still pretend like you guys still play football.
And took a bunch of L's. There's no doubt about it. And hey, listen, I'll be the first one to tell you, I picked the Buckeyes to win the national championship this year. And this was before last week, before seeing what Alabama could do. I just, when it comes to their depth, I felt it was going to be a rematch from last year. And I really like the playmakers on the outside that Ohio State has. I love their front line on the defensive side. I do want to get your early impression, though, on what they went through with Minnesota early on. The first, you know, couple of quarters with C.J. Stroud trying to figure things out. And then eventually Ryan Day saying, just get the ball to the playmakers. We'll figure everything else out. Just these quick passes, Olave, Wilson, they'll figure it out because they have the experience. And then we saw C.J. Stroud become more comfortable with the offense. Is that what was that your takeaway on the road against Minnesota?
Well, I think you got to realize young quarterback on the road, and Minnesota's ready. It wasn't like they're going to face a team that wasn't prepared. You know, that Minnesota at the time probably had maybe the best running back in the Big Ten, a quarterback that is experienced, and a team that was ready to go. And so it wasn't pretty at all times, but it was never in doubt who the better team was on the field. And so when you look at probably the entire weekend, I think there's probably three teams that really stood out. And Ohio State is one of those teams, Georgia, another one of those teams. And of course, what Alabama did. And I've always been impressed with how you guys keep having the same conversation about Alabama year after year. Hey, they lost 74 draft picks to the NFL. They are starting with a brand new quarterback. I don't know if I trust them to be ready to go. Every year, you guys have that same hey, Kev, I tapped out on that conversation about 3 years back when I realized they don't care. They will be ready to go when opening kickoff goes. It doesn't matter who they're, because you guys were having the same conversation about Mac Jones last year coming into that season. It's like, hey, new quarterback replacing Tua. What are they going to do? And they come out. And so I wasn't in. I haven't been in. I know what Alabama's going to do. It was unfortunate for Jonathan Vilma that it happened to be Miami that they did it to. But I think when you come off of last weekend, there are three teams. And look, it's way too early for this, Kev. But we're already having a discussion. Can the SEC get two teams in the playoff?
Because that's what we do, right? Like, what are Clemson's chances for the playoff, right? And then we're looking at the ACC schedule. Hey, listen, I was guilty of asking that question about Clemson and Georgia. And down the road, when you look at the schedule moving forward, because unfortunately, it feels like we've seen this trend continue over the last few years, right? It is the haves, and that is about five teams. Yes. And then there's a group that's from like 6 to 15 that may get in the conversation, like we saw a couple of years ago with LSU jumping in, and that they weren't in there in that original conversation. And then it's everybody else, right? But the gap between Bama is so large. And then you have Georgia, phenomenal defense, but question marks at all on offense. Then you have Clemson. Okay, you've got some questions now on that offensive line, right? Consistency, especially at the running back position. And then there's some questions, of course, I think, with their second level of defense. And then Ohio State. And then after that, it's like, well, is Oklahoma going to give us, you know, one of those dud games like we saw in the second half against Tulane, right? How do you process that, especially with the haves and that middle part and then the drop off?
I don't think there is a huge gap between Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. Mm. Obviously, I do believe Alabama after this past weekend is the best team in the country. But I would look at the performance by Georgia, and I wouldn't worry about what the offense did just yet. The defense was so dominant. I don't think that Georgia felt that they needed to take any chances on the offensive side. They throw the interception. I believe it led to the field goal by Clemson. And I think they literally said they can't score on us unless we help them. There was one touchdown in the entire game, and that was scored on defense. So I think Georgia said, hey, what we're going to do is protect the football, be physical, run the ball to keep the clock running, because we think our defense is shutting them down. So I don't think there's a huge gap there. Now, I don't want to say disappointed, but I sort of kind of listened to you experts about the Oklahoma defense. I didn't believe it, but at least I listened. Look, I'm not one of those guys that goes through an offseason and starts hearing about things and reading things and believing that a defensive football team, an entire defense, can get better. I need to see that. And so I wasn't a believer in Oklahoma's defense as much as I need to see it. I thought they'd be better than they were. The start was not good. And give Tulane credit. Tulane came by. Look, they went from a home game to on the road dealing with hurricane issues. And so give them a lot of credit. But early on, Oklahoma looked like they didn't know what they were doing on defense. A lot of mistakes, a lot of wide open people. Same tackling issues that we've seen for years now at Oklahoma. So I think the gap is between the top three and everyone else. I think there's your gap. And Oklahoma's probably that next tier. I was impressed with what Notre Dame did. And so I
think you were impressed with what you saw from Notre Dame.
I did. Now, look, fourth quarter bad. They got outscored in the fourth quarter, I think 18-0. The fourth quarter was bad. I guess when I say I was impressed with what they did with Jack Cohn in the offense, we had talked for a couple years now if Ian Book and their style of offense could compete with the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Clemsons, because it was run heavy and then some play action pass. It wasn't downfield passing. In that game, they came out with a completely different offensive mindset. And it was, we're going to throw the ball. We're going to use our quarterback and say, go win us a football game. You throwing the ball downfield, go win us a football game. Doing that and seeing how he handled it and what kind of game he had. If I'm Notre Dame, I'm feeling pretty darn good about my football team. Even though it was very close, I did like what I've seen. And I'm happy that Florida State showed up.
A different story, too, if Mayer makes those two catches, right?
For sure.
Baby Gronk, and no doubt he's the showcase piece aside from their backfield. They have the speed there in the backfield. But Mayer, if they're going to throw the football, he's the showcase piece for that offense. All right, let's get to Ohio State hosting Oregon. It's interesting. The line's 14.5. Stroud was good. I mean, Mayan Williams is one of those kids who just pops off the screen at running back. You saw it firsthand in real time here. They averaged 7.7 yards per carry. Thibodeau's status as of right now is day-to-day with the sprained ankle, so we don't even know if he's going to play for Oregon. Who you got in this game in the sense of the line, Ohio State? Are you laying the points at 14.5?
I'm very disappointed in myself because the line was at 14. And at 14, I felt really good. This is crazy how Vegas scares the crap out of people, right? So at 14, I felt really, really good. And I thought later in the week, I'm going to jump on. I'm going to take that bet. I watched film of both teams. Don't know what Thibodeau is going to do. I felt really good. I went back on there last night and seen 14.5. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yep.
It's amazing how that 0.5 will scare the crap out of you when it comes to Vegas, because it's like they know something.
They know it. I mean, like, look, for example, the Minnesota line, it was 14.
Yes.
The result was 14. They know every single.
Exactly. So at least I got out with a push. I'm still taking the Buckeyes minus the 14.5. I think that at home, Thibodeau, whether he plays or not, I think the offensive line will deal with him. And by the end of this game, it'll be probably about a 21-point win.
And you may be happy with the 14.5 on a Thursday, because we may get news that Thibodeau doesn't play on a Friday or Saturday. Mm-hmm. That changes the line. Maybe it jumps to 15 from 14.5 to 15. Right. And you're feeling good at 14.5, right? And this goes to one other thing. We could talk about these lines on a Thursday. You talked about what you saw on the opening line over the weekend. Considering college football and injuries and what can happen, what can't happen, like, I always hold it till Saturday morning. I don't make bets, but I always hold the idea of, am I going to do anything? Let's just see where we're at Saturday morning with all the updates on who's on the field and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to the big matchup on ABC. And of course,
wait a minute. I didn't hear your pick.
I got Ohio State laying a 14.5.
Okay, there we go.
I'm with you. You on that. I didn't. Yeah, I thought that was assumed, but 14.5 Ohio State, I think they win by 20. Let's go to the matchup I think that everybody has circled when it comes to the biggest game of the weekend. That is number 10, Iowa, at number 9, Iowa State. Iowa State, coming off that win against Northern Iowa, barely. They are favored by 4 Now, keep in mind, I was won 7 straight overall, 5 straight meetings in this Cy-Hawk rivalry. Where are you going here with Iowa State favored by 4?
I like Iowa. For some reason, I just feel like I have more confidence in Iowa State when they're playing in the Big 12. When they're playing outside the Big 12, I don't have as much confidence in what they're going to do. Iowa's going to be physical. They're going to come in with about 1 or 2 coverages. That's all they do. They're going to be where they're supposed to be. I think the biggest concern for Iowa State is Breece Hall did not. I think he had like 60 some yards rushing, and it might have been like a 3 yards per rush average. That's not good enough to make Iowa State very good, but I don't think he gets going against the Iowa defense. Give me Iowa in the points.
Yeah, I take Iowa in the points as well. This is a grinding game too. And Iowa's offense, Tyler Goodson had that one big run, but really the defense was the storyline against Indiana. They were fantastic. But I will take Iowa in a game that just feels like will be decided by 3 points or some ugly safety. And like, just, it's going to be crazy names. Game day going to be there. This is an interesting one that I pulled out because I wanted to get your initial thoughts on what you saw over the weekend from the Steve Sarkisian offense, Hudson Card, Bijan Robinson, Texas, on the road, favored by 7 at Arkansas. Who you got?
I don't feel good about this one, Kev. Clearly, what the program we have running here is I make a pick and then you agree.
No. Okay, I'll make the pick now. Will that make you feel better? Let's do that. We'll go back and forth, okay?
Go ahead. Who you got?
Right. I got Texas laying the 7. Listen, I like Sam Pittman. I like the energy that he brought last year, but I do like Hudson Card. Couple touchdowns. This game's going to come down to Bijan Robinson, best player on the field in my mind. And can Arkansas stop him? So Sark impressed me against Louisiana because I was curious about, are we going to see some of the old Texas that we've seen over the last few years where, you know, in the environment, they play against an experienced team and they don't know how to win games. They knew how to win games and Card looked like he was in control. So I'm laying the 7 on the road.
You know what, Kev? I kind of almost was going with you on that. I'm going to go Arkansas. I know they didn't get off to a great start last week. They finished well. I was impressed with the fact that Texas got a win against a Louisiana team that is a talented football team that has been known to win against the Big 12 team beating Iowa State last year. But I wasn't blown away. I wasn't to the point where I think that on the road, given Arkansas 7, made me feel comfortable. So I'll take the home team. I'll take Arkansas.
Arkansas. All right. Next one. This should be an interesting response. Miami on the road at Appalachian State. The Canes are laying 9. It's just so hard to gauge this team because it's hard to gauge any team in an opener when Nick Saban has 8 months to prepare for you. And then, I mean, everything's just handed to you. But I'm not sure how healthy De'Ara King is completely off that injury because, listen, Adrian Peterson's the only known human that we've seen, come back after less than 9 months from an ACL and just dominate again, right? And I see your
Kev, head. Kev, what you got? Kev. You're talking to a guy that had 2 ACLs and still ran a 4.1. Don't get carried away.
How long ago was that, though? Was it like within 9 months? Like, what was the gap from you running that 4.1?
Yeah, the crazy part about this ACL discussion that people have, I mean, they say it's a 6-month injury, but legitimately, you're back in 3. They just have to say 6 to like, hey, we got to take it slow. But I mean, it's really not 9 months. My goodness, Kev, you can come back in 9 months from an ACL. I mean, seriously, that it's not that crazy. But let me I think it's tough to gauge like De'Ara King on what happened in that game. Like that's just. Yeah,
you burn the tape, right?
Let's not even watch the game film of that. What I do think is Miami is talented enough to take advantage of a team that they're more talented than. I don't see Miami as a team that goes up against, goes toe-to-toe with a team that is more talented to even yet. I don't think they've learned how to win those kind of games. I think Miami is more talented. I think that they will be like, hey, we got to get back in this thing. Gain some confidence, get back in like the national eye of you know, feeling good. I'll take Miami minus the points.
Minus the points, minus nine.
Yeah.
Man, it felt like we were teetering that you were going to take Appalachian State in your conference. Nah. I'm with you. I'll lay the points. I'm not 100% sure about it, but I'll lay the points with Miami as well. All right, two more games. Number 21, Utah at BYU. I picked this game because this is a rivalry that these two programs hate each other. They despise each other. Utah laying seven. I'll go first this time. All right. Former Baylor quarterback Charlie Brewer is the quarterback now for the Utes. Tavion Thomas, the running back. I'm going with Utah laying the seven. And I don't feel 100% confident just because of a rivalry that it is. But I do like what I've seen from Brewer. So I'm going with Utah.
Very disappointing. You were a huge BYU fan last year.
Oh, here we go with this. No. Hey, listen, I thought BYU played really well last season.
Apparently, one of the wheels fell off of that bandwagon and you jumped off, which is okay. But I'm going to agree with you. I thought for sure this would be one where we would differ. But I do like Utah. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens with Utah, because as we look at the Pac-12, the Pac-12 is fairly open. So it'll be interesting to see what Utah looks like moving forward. But it's just unfortunate that you jumped right off of the BYU bandwagon.
We don't have Zach Wilson there, right? That's a big difference.
Oh, it's a Zach Wilson bandwagon. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Let's go to our final game. By the way, it's an inside joke with what Joey's trying to say about this BYU bandwagon thing. I thought they were really good last year. Yeah. All right. Michigan at the Big House hosting Washington. Michigan favored by seven. I mean, the big storyline for Michigan, no Ronnie Bell. And he's that one piece that we saw against Western Michigan. You're like, ooh, he pops off the screen. They had at least three plays of 60 yards, explosive plays. In that game, they had two of them all of last year. Mm-hmm. So it gives you an idea. Cade McNamara, who knows where we are with the offense. He just looked comfortable. It felt like, oh gosh, there's Jim may have finally have a quarterback. And Washington coming off that, I mean, horrendous loss to Montana where they score early and then that was it. So who you got in this one? Michigan laying the seven.
This is another one where you feel like Vegas knows something. Because like you said, Michigan looked better than we've seen them. And Washington looked absolutely terrible.
Terrible.
The game is at Michigan. This is the setup. This is how they get you, Kev. Because everybody in the country would think Michigan's going to win that game easy. Of course they are. And then Vegas jumps in here with a 7-point spread. You're like, oh, something's going on here.
Something's going on, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead with it, Kev. I like Michigan. Even without Bell. Now, Michigan is the kind of team that'll do that to you. They'll go against a Western Michigan or whoever they play. Mm-hmm. And because because they know they're better, they'll, hey, let's air it out. Let's throw it downfield. Let's have some fun. Then they get against one of the big boys, and all of a sudden it's like two tight ends, two fullbacks and a tailback, 1 yard and a cloud of dust offense. Don't throw it downfield. I am hoping here that they keep the same mentality. We're going down the field with the ball and take our chances. I'm going with Michigan minus the seven, even though I think this is a trap. I think Vegas knows something.
This feels like a sucker bet. Like you described everything about a sucker bet here, because this feels like the line should be at least double digits, 10 and a half, 11, 12, right? Especially what we saw with Washington. I'm with you 100% on everything you just said. Washington looks so bad that I'm going to get sucked into the same thing that you're saying as well. I'm going Michigan laying the seven and watch them get all conservative on us. And you're just scratching your head and saying, what happened? Like what happened with the offense?
Washington's going to win. We already know that.
So I'm going with Michigan. Watch, like you said, Michigan who kicks a game-winning field goal at the end. To just get by Washington. So I'm with you. So our only difference here, we're lockstep with everything. Our only difference is you got Arkansas and the points against Texas. Taylor, before we sign off with Joey, do you have an update on, you know, how we did last week?
So last week, guys, you differed on three different games. That was Indiana, Iowa, Georgia, Clemson, LSU, UCLA. Your overall records, Joey, you were 2-4. Kevin, you were 1-5. Kevin notching that win with his Iowa pick, where Joey was correct with Georgia and UCLA.
That's brutal, Joey. That's straight brute. Like, you know what? I'm going to write all these down because there's no way. I didn't feel like I was 1-5. I didn't feel like Joey was 2-4. Boy. Joey, we shouldn't be. Taylor, we shouldn't be talking about this
anymore. Let me apologize for saying, can we get the tally from last?
Exactly.
My bad. I didn't realize you were that bad, Kev. Now I know. Hey, look, pay attention, Kev. And text me. If we're terrible again, just text me. It's like, hey, don't bring up last week.
Don't bring it up. Listen, if I knew we were that bad, I was thinking that maybe we were two off and you were, 5-1 and I was potentially, 3-3. Taylor, we've got to go through the notes again. I disagree with whatever tally you came up with.
It's embarrassing.
Joey, appreciate it, man. Have fun on ESPN. What are you, Friday night as well? You're doing Friday night?
Friday, Saturday, Kev.
All right. Well, keep working, man. Keep working hard. I know you log all the hours. All right.
Yeah. I'll see you on campus. I can't wait to go back to work.
As promised, it's great to have. We do this every Thursday. We'll get Joey's picks and then we bring in an ESPN.com college football writer and one of my favorites. I love them all. Adam Rittenberg joining us with his perspective on so far the early part of the season. Adam, we will get to talking about the games in a moment. But of course, the world was flipped upside down when it comes to college football over the last month and a half with the Texas, Oklahoma, Big 12 SEC conversation. And then the domino effect with the college football realignment. What are you hearing now and where we're at? Because of course, the big news with the Big 12 is, the addition of potentially four schools, three from the American, including BYU, as well as BYU. What update can you provide on the status of that?
Right. Well, that's going to go through. And this has all happened very quickly. I first heard about these four schools, I guess, a week ago Monday, and people were telling me this is really happening fast. And here we are basically on the eve of it becoming official, those four schools coming into the Big 12. Now, the interesting thing will be the timing, right? Because the Big 12 is going to eventually become two members short with Texas and Oklahoma moving to the SEC. Then you add four. When do they come into the league? You have one, as you mentioned, that's an independent. You have three that are members of the American, which requires a 27-month notice before they leave the league, and maybe they can negotiate that a little bit. So are they moving over in 2023 or 2024? Will there be a year where the Big 12 is 14 and then go down to 12? There's also the possibility of another round of additions from the Big 12 over the next few years, because this is all about positioning for the future. It's about positioning for an expanded playoff, and it's really about positioning for the next round of media rights negotiations. So when people ask, what are they looking for? They're certainly looking to make their football brand as strong as possible. And I think all four of the additions do that. But who are these schools? How big are their alumni base? How devoted are they? How invested are they in football? And ultimately, are those fans going to, invest in whatever our media agreement is in the future? Because it may not just be straight linear television. It may be streaming. And so are you going to buy that subscription? So those things are all important to remember, because sometimes fans think, Houston is not where it was under Tom Herman. So why are you adding them? Well, there's a lot of other reasons to add them. Why is Memphis not getting consideration? Well, Memphis has about half the number of living alumni as Cincinnati. And it basically was an irrelevant football program before 2014. So that's a part of the calculus. It doesn't mean that Memphis won't get added eventually, but that's why these four, if you really study it, especially BYU, UCF, and Cincinnati, they jump out as obvious additions for the Big 12, even though they considered all of them in 2016 and decided to add none of them.
Are we at a point now? I mean, the one thing I always encounter is, when's it going to end? Are we at a point where we're going to see 16 teams, 20 teams? I've heard four conferences. Where do you see past this like immediate addition to where we could be in the next 5 years?
Well, there will be more realignment. We know certainly the American is going to add schools, but the whole four conference thing, I think it was all predicated on the Big 12, you know, maybe going away. And it doesn't appear that that's going to happen, at least in the immediate. So I struggle to figure out how that becomes something until the Big 12 is maybe weakened further or there's some type of movement that's made. I mean, the SEC is in such a strong position. I really don't see very many realistic additions to that league that make it stronger. Mm. Same with the Big Ten. Other than adding Notre Dame somehow, and that's been attempted in the past and it hasn't been successful. Unless that happens, I don't know who adds real value to the Big Ten. So maybe I'm naive, and I guess I've heard the same things you have for years. But I don't sense that, you know, given what's happened with the Pac-12 not expanding, the alliance being formed in large part as an alternative to expansion, and then the Big 12, you know, getting back to a number that's a little bit more okay, they can survive in a maybe different form. I don't know if it's necessarily going to go to four conferences, but it could. And, you know, this realignment thing doesn't just end. There's always another chapter to it. And just figuring out when that chapter happens, maybe it will be in 3 or 4 years when a lot of these television negotiations happen. And that's what's tricky. But I just don't think there's a lot of obvious additions, Kevin, for some of the power leagues at the very top of the sport.
We could just say, never say never to anything, right? Everything's wide open, especially with the news of Texas, Oklahoma going to the SEC. Like, you can say, well, I'm not surprised, but if somebody says that, it's like, come on. and obviously the domino effect. So we'll see how this landscape continues to evolve. And of course, if we have more information, we'll bring you in. I do want to talk about something on the field because, you know, guys that like you and Heather Dinich, who cover all this stuff with, you know, realignment and all, you catch a break here where we have football, which is great, right? And there are so many good stories. You have a piece on .com surrounding the quarterbacks and so many new faces. And we've talked about them. We saw Stroud, CJ make his debut, Bryce Young make his debut, DJ Uiagalelei, you know, in his third start, Jack Cohn now with a new team, Hudson Card, Haynes King. From that piece and what you did leading up to it and what you saw over the first week, what was the thing that stood out?
Right. Well, this is really our first impression of these new quarterbacks. And all four playoff participants have new starting quarterbacks. Now, Jack Cohn comes in a little different position. He started 18 games at Wisconsin and is a much older player. But in terms of Stroud and Young and Uiagalelei, they, you know, even though DJ had played a couple of games last year, you know, they're coming in essentially new. And so it was essentially my piece was looking at the performance and also talking to people about the performance and sort of evaluating it. And it was different. I mean, not surprisingly, Bryce Young got incredible reviews for how he played against Miami. And, you know, one thing that struck me talking to a Power Five defensive coordinator, he actually spotlighted one of his incomplete passes and said it was a great play to throw the ball out of the end zone because he's not putting his team in danger and they're still able to score on that possession, even though he was obviously brilliant with the downfield game and getting receivers involved and spreading the ball around. And poise was a word that came up a lot in the evaluation of Young. Stroud was a little mixed review. And again, to be fair to him, Ohio State only ran 41 plays before their final drive, which was a 7-play, basically clock killing heavy run drive. So he wasn't out there very much and had kind of a predictably shaky first half. And then in the second half, he averaged 47.2 yards of completion because he only completed 5 passes. They all happened to be really long passes. So I think that's one where people are kind of wait and see. Ball didn't explode out of his hands, one coordinator told me. But again, it's pretty early for him, and he's got a great supporting cast, as does Bryce Young. The thing with DJ, which will be interesting to watch, especially because the schedule will soften the rest of the way, you know, how is he going to handle pressure? And how is Clemson's offensive line going to handle pressure? Because clearly that's what Georgia did, and that's why they were so effective. As somebody was telling me, a scout, you know, it's always so clean for Clemson's quarterbacks, and it wasn't for him in that first game. He had pressure constantly in his face, and there wasn't, you know, it's kind of figuring out how much of that was just great Georgia, how much of it was bad Clemson offensive line or bad DJ. That's what's going to be hard to figure out, because they're not going to face most likely a defense that will be able to do what Georgia did to them the rest of the way. So it's about growing. There's still a lot of faith that he'll be fine, but obviously not the ideal performance in his first start as the true QB1 for Clemson.
Adam, good stuff. And we could find this piece over on ESPN.com, right?
Correct.
For our college football audience. Appreciate you taking the time, and we look forward to having you down the road on future Thursdays where we talk about the entire landscape of college football the rest of the season.
Awesome. Really appreciate it, Kevin. Looking forward to the rest of the season.
Big thanks to Adam Rittenberg. Always great to have his insight, as well as talking about the new quarterbacks, as well as the Big 12 and realignment. And that that conversation will not be going away when it comes to realignment throughout the college space. And of course, Joey Galloway. Taylor, next time, you know, I'm with Joey. No, and if we go 1-4, 1-5, and 2-4, we'll just say I'm one back, or I'm two back, or Joey's one back of me in the standings.
That's a great idea.
I don't think I've had that bad of a weekend last year with David Pollack. That was brutal when it comes to the spread, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, it's week one. You guys don't know anything, so hopefully next week will be better. That's
exactly all. Exactly. Yeah. So we got that out of the way, and looking forward to our conversation next week with Joey and our picks. I'm looking forward to the weekend, and of course, week two of the college football season. Stay safe and talk to you soon. And before I go, big thanks, of course, to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, making sure all things go here behind the scenes for the College Football Podcast.